Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Can an artist find inspiration along a stretch of South Dakota highway? Altman Studeni spent 5 days living on the median at exit 107 west of Wall. His latest exhibition is now showing at Black Hill State University. It's called Roadwork. Altman Studeni joins us now from the Sue W. White Studio at Black Hills State University. Altman, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me back on, Lori.
Let's talk about where this idea even came from, because you didn't have a project before you went out into the world.
That's right. I have been very interested in these spaces. The last time we spoke, I was working with School of Mines on exploring where people find nature and where they believe the edge of the city begins for themselves. And I've been asking some questions of myself about that over the summertime. And I've been really fascinated with this spot of the interstate where the eastbound and westbound lanes split for a long time now. And I've said to a lot of friends that I just want to see what's out on there. And with the show coming up, I thought this was a good opportunity to look into that.
Now, do you have the kind of friends that say, yeah, I get that? Or do you have the kind of friends that say, huh, why would you do such a thing?
I feel very fortunate to have the friends and peers that I do. They're very encouraging of these sort of strange and oftentimes dumb ideas.
So you don't know if it's going to work. I mean, not every idea works out.
Right. But every idea has something that results from it. Right. So even if it's not, what was planned originally, there's always some, and that's even the best part, right? That oftentimes the thing that results is better than what you could have ever imagined. And I think that was the case with this experience out on the median.
All right. Tell me about the median itself. Take me there, paint a picture of what exactly it looks like for folks who just zoom by.
Yes. So around exit 107, which is the Cedar Butte Road exit west of Wall, the eastbound and westbound lanes of I-90 split. And the westbound lane goes high and the eastbound lane goes low. And I remember this spot a lot when I was driving west when I was in high school. And it's the moment where you see the hills in the distance, misty in the distance. And in between those two lanes, there's about a mile and a quarter of space. There's a mile and a quarter of land out there. And I was really curious about whether the interstate did something in relation to preservation of that land. If there was something about being bounded by those bands of concrete on either side that preserved some type of landscape in the middle. And as I hiked down in from Wall and along the edge of the road, there's, been lots of mowing and lots of road work. And so the vegetation that's growing along the edge is pretty blown out. There's lots of thistle and, plants that kind of indicate a less healthy environment. And there's also a lot of human interaction along the road in that spot as well. Lots of things that have been thrown from cars and the leftovers of accidents. And as you walk down a little bit further, there's a band of sort of high plainsy, prickly pear cactus and yucca plants. And further down, there's areas of rich and healthy grassland. There's, blue stem and buffalo grass. And then at the very bottom, it's wet and kind of marshy. And there's lots of trees, a surprising lots of trees, little stands of shrubbery through there. And there's also a little lake out on the median as well. And it was that spot where most of the animals and birds were gathering on the days that I was out there.
You talk a little bit about Thoreau. What's his inspiration in this? Because it's a very different world that you inhabit than what Thoreau inhabited.
Yes, part of this exercise was that I wanted to read A Week on the Concord and Merrimack Rivers, and I just knew that I wouldn't if I didn't make a plan, if I didn't kind of put myself in a position to do so. So I figured, well, I'll just go out and then read this, and then I'll be done whenever I'm done with the book. And throughout reading, there's all these, A Week in the Concord and Merrimack talks about a trip that Thoreau and his brother took up the river. And I'm really struck by the thought that the entire span of their trip is essentially driving back and forth to Wall. So something that they took 2 weeks to do out and back is something that we're able to do in the course of just a short afternoon. And this question of pacing is really interesting to me, that, when you're on the interstate and going at 80, there are these kind of blank spots on the landscape, these areas that your brain just blanks out because they're not in that time frame that you're operating on. and this spot to kind of sit on it and think about what these spaces mean to us, or what these spaces could mean to us, was really interesting. And Thoreau offered like one particularly great nugget. And the show has some of this information on the wall, along with the photo documentation and then some specimens that I collected along the way. But what Thoreau said, he said that the true poem is not that which the public read. There is always a poem not printed on paper, coincident with the production of this, stereotyped in the poet's life. It is what he has become through his work. And 120 years before like experiential art of the 1960s, Thoreau was commenting on these issues, that really what the value of some of these enterprises might be is the way that it changes you as you do them.
Right. So tell me about the experience of being out there then for the week, some of the highs and the lows.
Well, there's a lot of boredom, which is, I guess, to be expected, and something that after a while I didn't find as a problem, right? Like, I think that there's some benefit in being bored, because you start looking more carefully at what is actually present. And, you know, I like to think of myself as pretty comfortable with not having something to do, or, you know, being able to be a little thoughtful about spaces. But when you're kind of bounded by a mile, there is a lot of time to fill. And it was hot, it was July, and so I started feeling like I was kind of living a little bit like the deer out on the median did too, you know, that in the heat of the day, I was just kind of lounging around a lot, and then when the sun would go out, I'd take a few hikes around and, you know, look at some grasses and collect some, you know, start pressing some flowers and stuff. So, I mean, I guess the low kind of ended up in highs, you know, when you, with that limitation of space and time, and there's not as much that, there's not as much kind of vying for your attention, things start revealing themselves as being worthy of attention.
At some point, are you concerned with how to translate this experience, or at what point are you thinking about how best to translate that experience in an exhibition or in, you know, in a poem, in a piece of art? And when does the audience come into your mind?
Yes, that's a really good question. And that's something I have found myself asking myself a lot of, with this idea that there is, you know, the main value might just be what the experience was like for me. But then the second half of being an artist is, how do you share anything about that? How do you share some shred of that? And I think that, you know, it was the opportunity to have the show at the Riddell Gallery. And I've been working with the curator, Michael Baum, who's my office mate, and with Scott Chandler, who is the person who's sharing the space, the photography professor at Black Hills State, who did a project about South Dakota roadside attractions. We just started finding parallels between the work that we were doing and, you know, the limitations of that space as well. What can a gallery do and what can a gallery not do? And, you know, it can't ever communicate the fullness of that experience. But I think that, you know, artists provide a model for interacting with the world. So just presenting to people some of the documentation and some of the documents and, you know, lines from A Week in the Concord and Merrimack that I was really drawn to. And is there some way that then for the viewer, they're able to knit that all together in their mind? Can the space of the gallery be a different type of experience where the people who are coming to see the show are themselves, you know, trying to cobble together meaning from this visual information and from the natural objects and from some words, and just the relationship between those objects and the other things that are in the space as well.
So if part of the role is to sort of model, you know, how to interact with the world, or a new way of interacting with the world, or different ways, you have to open up your process a little bit to people so they see not just the most, you know, perfect rendition of art that you can put forward, but they also see some of the, you know, the times you sort of crossed out. Or do you think? I mean, do they have to see part of the process so that they can see themselves in the process?
Yes, and I've really liked to think about the gallery as a studio space as well. That, you know, I don't know what's going to go into that. I have some ideas and I've collected certain things, but through the process of sorting that out in myself and what's going to go up on the wall and how do we, you know, by placing this photograph next to this book and this book next to this dehydrated meal, is there a narrative that's strung through those things? So yeah, it's not a perfect space, and I'm not interested in art that looks perfect. I like, you know, the suggestion of the human hand in it. and how we're all just trying to figure things out through the work that we do. I think there's so much of this thought that like artists have a have some privileged information, or that they've got like a through line to the ether where something's whispering in their ear just how it should look, and we're just trying to figure it all out too, you know. Right.
Can you articulate to people why this kind of art project, the process that you went through, why is it important? Because to me, it feels just very important that someone is doing that, that someone is still out there doing this sort of thing, following their intuition, giving it the time that it needs. Do you find it easy to articulate to that to other people that this has value and it is not just a placeholder, but that it moves the conversation about art in our time forward?
That's what I like about being a teacher a lot, and that's what I value about the role as that I have at Black Hills State, is that you can guide a classroom of students through the process of noticing. The artist John Cage, the composer John Cage, an artist, had this great thing to say about boredom, where he said, if I find something boring for a minute, I do it for two. And then if I find it boring for two, I do it for four. And if four, eight, if eight, 16. And eventually I've realized it's not boring at all. The things that we oftentimes overlook as not having a lot of value, once we start analyzing them and once we start paying really close attention to what's happening in them and allowing that object or allowing that experience or environment to tell us a little bit of something about itself, it does reveal its strangeness, and it does reveal some of its, quiet beauty, or it does reveal some of its incomprehensibility and absurdity. And all of that has something teach us. And I'm not saying that from some sort of preachy way. I'm not saying that everyone needs to like act a certain way or, listen really carefully to the rocks or something. But when there are those moments where we're finding ourselves maybe ducking away from something because we don't like it or we think that it doesn't look right, if instead of, reverting back to that instinctual reaction, like, I don't want to look at that anymore, we sit with it, I think that there will be moments where those things will tell us something about how to interpret them or tell us something about their value.
When did you know it was time to go home? Did you know that you were done, in quotation marks?
I woke up to a coyote poking around my tent door, and I figured that was signal enough that everything that needed to be explored was probably pretty explored, and now it was starting to explore me.
Yeah. Did any people discover you and wonder what you're doing at the time?
In a certain sense, it was almost too big of a space. In my brain, I kind of liked the idea of being evident a little bit. And as the longer that I was out there, I kind of kept pushing the edges of where I was spending most of my time. First night that I was down, I was really cautious about, finding a spot that was really secluded. And then the next night I got a little bit closer to the road. And then, some afternoon I'm just sitting on the side by a Russian olive tree reading a book, and not a soul. I mean, there just wasn't any awareness that I was out there. And even I think in some way that space was out there. It was just something to drive around. But when I was walking back and forth, the pack that I was using was this kind of great old Hillary pack from the early 80s. And anyone in a van would honk and like give me a fist out the window, which I really liked, like a sort of solidarity fest.
What did you leave anything behind that would indicate to someone else that you had been there?
Only the work in the gallery. It's true. Yeah. It was really important to me. This was like a zero impact sort of experience. So I wanted to leave that spot as much of itself as it was. And, I think that in some way of being there, I've left a little bit of myself out there. And every time I pass by, I have a real fondness. And I think about what might be going on that little stretch of land this afternoon that I'm not getting a chance to see. And I hope that the same might be true for people who see the show, or some people who have talked to about the show, that as they pass by too, there's a little curiosity about that little stretch of the negative space between the roads.
And what have you become through the work? If that's the one of the central questions that for you, how did you change?
Oh man, that's a really great question. I think that I'm just further cemented in a curiosity about how small these places could be, like where our nature is, or like where our sense of nature is, this kind of dilation and then shrinkage of what you really need to feel connected to an environment around you. Mm-hmm. And you know, if it's possible on that median. When I was just this summer up in Acadia National Park for a little while in Maine, and I was really excited to have snagged a campsite out there, and there was just one cancellation on the calendar the night that I was going to be there, and I felt, oh, how great is it going to be to, you know, really get out into the national park, get out in, you know, the wilds of Maine. And that spot, when I pitched my tent, just felt incredibly tame in a way that the median didn't. You know, that was a space that was operating on its own time scale and with its own set of concerns that I was very much not a part of. You know, for a few days, I was just visiting that. But in a certain way, the national park space was made more for me and was made for us, you know, quote, made for us. At least the infrastructure of that was there so that we could, you know, have ready access from the road and we could, you know, not have to be too inconvenienced going for water. And I'm curious now in next projects and next steps of looking a little bit more deeply into smaller, more at the same time more connected and more removed. Can these spots be found within a city? Can you find a sense of the wild in the middle of a metropolis?
You've got a book here, right?
Boy, there's the doctoral dissertation.
You know, there you are.
If there's any programs listening, you know, get in touch.
All right, Altman Studeni, absolutely. You can see the exhibition Roadwork in the Black Hills State University Gallery. Riddell, is that I just lost the name?
That's
the
right,
Riddell Gallery. Thank you very much for that. It's open now through September 14th. Altman, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Laura. It's always a pleasure.
Altman Studeni joined us from the Sue W. White Studio at Black Hills State University.